with a whole lot of truth. Remedy Revolution is here for you.
Ooh. And now here's your host, Aaron Page.
All interviews presented on the Remedy Revolution podcast are designed to provide information and inspiration only. Guests of the podcast may present opinions and anecdotes which are solely their own. And as always, before beginning any treatment protocol, please consult with your preferred medical provider. Welcome to the Remedy Revolution. My name is Erin, and today's guest is somebody I am really excited to have on. We happen to have three things in common, which are about as easy to find as searching for a unicorn. So number one, we both host podcasts, specifically podcasts that are focused on health and freedom and those kinds of topics that, we are both very passionate about. Number two, we are both authors. So for those of you who do not know, I have authored a book. It is out on Amazon called Mind Over Fatter, The Secret to Thinking Yourself Thin. That was a long time ago, but nevertheless, it's something we have in common. And the third thing, which is, again, extremely rare, we are both homeopaths. And so I have to ask you, this is the great, the wonderful Robert Scott Bell. Please go listen to his podcast. He's got fascinating guests on. But Robert, why homeopathy?
Well, I don't know why. Initially, because I was raised medically and pharmaceutically and allopathically in America through the first 19 years of my life before I gave up on allopathic medicine because of what they did to me. We can go through that if you want. It wasn't until 4 or 5 years later, after prayers, petitions, everything, that I was able to find, or it found me, homeopathy. It was completely unknown to me. I'd never heard the word until I was 24 years of age in this lifetime. So the journey to health and healing led me to it. Or it was led to me, where I began to study with a homeopath that emigrated to the U.S. from Belgium for 10 years and learned the clinical branch of homeopathy based on drainage techniques out of France in the latter years of Dr. Hahnemann himself, going way back. And it allowed me to undo the damage from being raised pharmaceutically, medically, and on food that was not organic. That was clearly pesticide laden and all the other things that were unknown to me as an American. We just thought food was the faster and the cheaper, the better, right? And I was sick because of it. So homeopathy saved my life. It got me to undo all the damage that those 24 years of not knowing anything about health and healing in reality, it reversed all of that. And then I was able to dedicate my life to help others to do the same or better, and still doing that many, many years later. Now, 30 years later, 25 years into my broadcast career as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So broadcast, obviously, but what led you then to start a podcast? I know podcasting, you know, a lot of people do start podcasts and inevitably fail, if you will, after about 3-4 months or so. But you've been, you know, at this for quite some time. So what was it that brought you to this? And did it have to do with perhaps spreading the homeopathic message? Because I know you have things like the homeopathic hits on your website, which are a fantastic resource too for anybody looking for some more homeopathic resources. But what brought you into the podcasting world?
Well, I was interviewed in 1994 in Atlanta on WSB 750. It was what they call a 50,000-watt blowtorch station that doesn't turn on its power at night. And we were interviewed on a liberal host's show at that time on various natural medicine topics, including homeopathy. And it was scheduled for an hour, ended up being 4 hours. They said only one other show they did that with. The switchboard was lit up with a lot of outraged doctors and nurses, believe it or not. It wasn't all pleasant. And then there were a few calls that were like, wow, this is amazing. I've never heard this. I'm so glad you're saying it. And so I kind of planted a seed in the back of my head at that time that, hey, man, this is something I didn't know in America. And I wonder if others would like to know it as much as I would. And I felt like I got to spread the word, right? You get into a very passionate place of you want to proselytize the new finding. And I thought one day, based on that experience, maybe I could go into radio and communicate this more than just on a one-to-one basis. And then in 1999, started a radio show in Atlanta on WGUN. That was another 50,000 watt. That was a Christian broadcast station, and it's called The Big Gun. And a few years later, got picked up for national syndication, and ended up, you know, every week was on the air for many years. Went from one syndicator to another after a while. And then as things transitioned in 2011, on it was Groundhog Day 2011, my buddy Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, you know, from Natural News, launched Natural News Radio, and he made me the anchor, if you will, of that new endeavor, which was an online kind of radio thing for the first time, because I had been in radio all of that time. And so we began a 6 day a week show, not just 1 day a week. And so ever since then, I've been on 6 days a week, and it's transitioned more and more online as we have seen the reach actually supersede radio. And well, interestingly enough, the censorship reared its ugly head during the COVID years, and we got deplatformed and censored and banned on many, many outlets, although we've survived that and gone on to be available in many outlets beyond those that banned us. So again, that's the short version of a long story. But yeah, it was truly wanting to share with my fellow Americans initially that which none of us seemed to know. Very rare to find anybody that knew homeopathy. I went to Emory University in Atlanta, and I found out years after I graduated that they taught homeopathy in the medical school curricula at Emory in Atlanta up until 1949. And I'm like, how is that possible? I went through that school, never heard that. And you know, we go back into the history of medicine in America. I was introduced to the Divided Legacy series by Harris Coulter. Harris Coulter was a brilliant man and historian. And in fact, the weird thing about that connection was that my year I graduated from Emory in 1988, the keynote speaker, you know, they bring celebrities in to speak at these things, was Mikhail Gorbachev from the former Soviet Union after it fell, or right as it was falling. It was 88, so it wasn't fully done yet. And the translator for that talk was Harris Coulter. It's wild. And so years later, then in the year 2000, I was invited to participate because I was serving on the American Association of Homeopathic Pharmacists as a board member, AAHP, and I was invited to attend the rededication of the Samuel Hahnemann Memorial in Washington, D.C. at Scott Circle. The only physician honored with his own memorial happened to be a homeopath, the homeopath in Washington, right, D.C., our nation's capital. And at that time, you know, you learn that 100 years earlier in the year 1900, President Grant was present for it. In this case, Clinton sent the presidential band, but he didn't show up at the time. That was an interesting time. But again, fascinating journey through history. And Harris Coulter was there as well. He was in a wheelchair at the time at that event. So I got to meet and talk with him about things and many others. So it's an interesting history to not know anything about our medical history in America and completely be duped into believing only allopathic medicine is what exists as a, you know, monopoly, of course, and nothing else is real, to recognize the entire history of medicine in America was woven into natural medicine, including homeopathy and much of its history, going back to Civil War museums in Georgia, where I grew up for 30 years, and finding out that all the medical field kits that I witnessed were actually homeopathic. Like, I had no idea. So
yeah,
you feel like, wow, if they could erase that history, what else have I been lied to about? And that kind of led me on a journey to do my show. And as you know, it's not just about homeopathy, even though we've embedded homeopathy into it, of course, but the entirety of how do we bring back the lost knowledge of natural medicine in America?
Absolutely. You know, I've spoken a little bit about the Flexner Report and the Rockefellers and the systematic dismantling of homeopathic education, which was kind of the backdoor with which they, you know, got into this whole idea of introducing pharmaceutical medicines as the gold standard, if you will. So, you know, they came in and took over the medical education, then came in and said to Congress, well, we also need to have licensure for all of these practitioners. And because they had already set the curriculum, which did not include homeopathic medicine, then the licensure also did not include homeopathic medicine. So it was very much a systematic erasure of our history. And what's crazy is when I tell people, yeah, you know, homeopathy was involved in all of the hospitals, the original hospitals in the United States. And people are shocked. Because most people don't even know what the word homeopathy means. So, most people think it's just this blanket term for anything holistic or natural or non-pharmaceutical. But, of course, you and I see that as something very different. So let's kind of talk about your journey, because I am interested to know, what it was for you personally that you saw with homeopathic medicine that really changed your view of perhaps what healing looked like.
Well, for the first time in my life at 24, I met a doctor who could look at me and within minutes of observing me, tell me about my entire medical history and be right about everything. And this is the craziest thing ever. I asked the guy if he was a psychic, and he laughed. He's like, no, I'm not a psychic. I'm a homeopath. And at that moment, that sounded even weirder because I had met and heard about psychics, right? Not homeopaths. and so that piqued my interest. And then the story that he told of being basically on death's door with tuberculosis in the 1960s, given up for dead by not only the allopaths, but the homeopaths as well. And he found a way through homeopathy to save his life, looking back into the history of many books written around the world, including Vanier in France, who wrote about tuberculosis and homeopathy. Mm-hmm. And he followed that protocol, which was based on, again, the drainage technique out of France, and began to detoxify and drain the toxins from his body and restore the digestive function and address the inflammation. All of these things, what we call about, I liken that to what we call the law of the terrain, clearing the terrain. And he gained health that he almost never had as someone who was injured back in the in the 1920s with the smallpox vaccine, which was then cowpox. So he was injured early on as well and created chronic diseases for which nobody really knew much about, but the homeopaths did. And so he intrigued me enough, and I saw energy in this guy in his 60s running circles around me in my 20s at that point, because I was chronically ill already, that I began to apply the drainage principles, went organic, continued to supplement the things that were not available in the food. We talk about mineral deficiencies, etc. So it wasn't an isolationist approach. It was a little of everything, but homeopathy was the key to get my body back online, metabolically functioning, cellular level functioning. And within a couple of weeks, I was having dramatic symptomatic shifts that showed me I was on the right track for the first time in my life, having been on drugs my whole life because of modern medicine. And continued that track within a couple of years, had overcome most all of the major illnesses I'd suffered for the previous 24. And knew then, even before that, I had begun to dedicate my life to this new path as a healer. And I had always known I would grow up to be a doctor, although the only image I had of doctoring and medicine was modern medicine and allopathic medicine. So, when I realized at the age of 19 or so that I couldn't become a medical doctor because if I did to others what they did to me, I would be miserable, which interestingly enough, my uncle, the medical doctor, dear Uncle Bob, no longer with us, he warned me not to become a doctor when I was in my teen years. I'm like, Uncle Bob, you're a doctor. How would you tell your nephew not to become a doctor? He says, you'll be miserable. I'm like, what are you talking about, right? And he planted seeds for me to realize what he was trying to impart, a truth. He kind of knew my spirit, even he as a medical doctor, and that I figured out later on. And so I kind of gave up on the dream of being a doctor because I realized I couldn't stomach doing that. And then finding homeopathy lit that fire back in me that, like, oh, that's what I was looking for. That's what I wanted to do, help people without harming them, including myself. So by doing that, I wanted to teach others to do the same or better. And if I, couldn't teach people to become homeopaths outright, I could at least introduce them to the concepts and the remedies so that they could, take steps along that way. And over the years in broadcast media, found it was perhaps more valuable than just sitting up hanging a shingle and seeing one person at a time, although I did for many years. And I still help people in that way. But by and large, I dedicated my life to educating on holistic medicine, of course, but homeopathy is a core principle there. And as you mentioned on my show, we do these homeopathic hits every day, which is like an introduction. It's not a deep dive, but we just kind of go through each single remedy ingredient and talk about some of the principled characteristics. So maybe it'll pique the interest of somebody who goes, oh, that sounds great. I want to go further and bring that back into the common vernacular and comfort level for all Americans. And now, of course, around the world, the show is broadcast because we're not limited by just the radio signal.
Yeah, I find that so helpful. I do think the education piece is hugely missing. You know, like I mentioned, most people, when I say I'm a homeopath, they think, you know, a what? A homo sapien? No, actually, there's a lot of confusion around even the word homeopathy. So I applaud you for what you've been doing, because, you know, educating others is really a huge piece of this puzzle, especially when we're talking about medical freedom. And I know that that's been a big part of your journey as well. So, you know, moving forward, how do we move the needle, in your opinion, to enhance the understanding of the general population with regard to homeopathy, supplementation, naturopathy, all of these things that are very helpful, versus this allopathic model of sick care, pill for an ill, all of these things that unfortunately don't seem to be making people actually better or getting to the root cause of an illness? How do we move that needle, do you think?
Well, we have to tap into and facilitate the consciousness shift that is occurring no matter what we do or don't do at this point. You know, if we do nothing and just sit by and watch it, people are going to be gravitating, as they are and have been for a while now, to things that we know, homeopathics, naturopathy, other things like that, because the failure of allopathic medicine has become so evident during the COVID years more than any other time in my history as a homeopath. Have I witnessed the abject destruction of allopathic medicine as a mainstay in America and much of the West. It's like in the dying death throes. It's not completely gone, and it never will be, because there is a place for allopathic medicine. It is born of warfare, interestingly enough. You know, the identification of how do we patch up a soldier that's been riddled with bullets and get them back on the battlefield. That's not an easy task, and they've advanced scientific and surgical techniques to do things that are incredible. But if we apply that same technique to chronic disease, it's devastatingly failing, and it's a failure for that. So people are realizing that finally, and even doctors, you know, we talked off the air briefly about Peter McCullough, who I admire greatly, and he's appeared on my show a number of times, and I watched his transition in a rapid way during COVID from, you know, the initial concern for the COVID injection that they wrongly call a vaccine. And initially, you know, he's still getting flu shots every year, and he's got his kids fully vaccinated. He's fully vaccinated, to now appearing on my show and others saying, my grandkids will get zero vaccinations. Mm-hmm. So we see that deep within the highest levels of medicine, doctors who have integrity are recognizing the failures of their own system, or the limitations, if they don't want to use the word failure. And that's an uncomfortable place to be for the doctors that have risen to the exalted status, you know, like an MDT in a sense, where they're elevated above everyone else. And we have this worshipful culture of the doctor. And that has displaced, I believe, our worship in a true creator, God, and elevated man to godlike status, which is always very dangerous because we're all fallible. You know, an ego can drive us to do horrible things. So right now it is just to facilitate, acknowledge, point out, maybe help along the way, or maybe bring more ridicule to the absurdity of what allopathic medicine has brought us, that is suppressive medicine, toxic medicine, and point out those limitations as more and more are recognizing it, and then provide for another means by which people can achieve healing. Now, I would argue it needs to be completely decentralized. We don't need bureaucracies regulating and planning and limiting, right, the freedom of healers to heal. Because as much as my mentor was brilliant in his methods, I have my own, let's say, tapping connection to what I've learned. And each homeopath that comes out of a school may have talents and skills and intuition to take homeopathy in a little bit of a different direction in their practice. But that's always the way it was when we go back to the history of learning to be a master of any craft, and that is healing or homeopathy. It was a master-apprentice relationship throughout history until it became a centralized, organized, orchestrated, standardized method of teaching that we have devolved into, whether it be even in homeopathic, quote-unquote, schools or allopathic schools. It's a one-size-fits-all scenario almost, and in that way, we limit even innovation there. So I believe in the direct connection to the source of all healing. And I've said this, and when I do a lecture, maybe you've seen, like, there's a particular slide I have where it says, my role or the real role of a doctor, a teacher, physician, healer is not to find the right remedy for the patient. And that's kind of weird because, you know, why do you go to homeopath? I need the right remedy. No, it's not that. It's to rekindle the relationship or remind people of the source of all healing, mm-hmm. and that is their divinity, their connection to the divine. Now, in that way, whether you're a learned homeopath or not, you can be given the information to get the right remedy for you. Now, that doesn't mean I'm opposed to a formal education. That's not what I'm saying. But the recognition we've been limited by the idea that only that could provide access to the healing we need, vibrational, energetic, homeopathic, et cetera. So I'm very much into decentralization on this to teach people how to reconnect to the source of all healing. And then I think many will be guided to homeopathy as one of the mainstays, like it was in the past, of moving forward in terms of what healing is available. Mm-hmm. And we could have lay homeopaths all over the world because there won't be enough formal homeopaths available ever, right. I believe, to meet the demand that's needed. So to bring it out, democratize it, if you will, make everybody have an ability to access it, even though not everybody's going to be, full on trained, whatever, that doesn't bother me so much as what bothers me are those that would want to have that same elite status conferred to them from allopathic doctors to homeopathic doctors. So they contain and constrain the knowledge that they believe no one else has access to. That to me is again, arrogant and ego-driven rather than driven by, I believe what Hahnemann was, genuinely trying to help people. And right. He wasn't so concerned with dogma, even as he wrote the various organons, but always was changing and shifting and evolving going on to his latter years in France. If you've ever read A Homeopathic Love Story by Rima Handley, you'll see that, in his elder years, he was encountering different kinds of patients among the aristocracy of Paris that were far different from the basis for homeopathy that was rooted in the peasants of Germany, the strong, healthy, vital, forced people that were working the land. And they were, they're not like the average Westerner today where, if you have to dig in the dirt, you're like, ow, I broke a fingernail, right? So things have transitioned, not to say that the origin of homeopathy is changed in principle, but the inordinate flexibility of energy and metabolic interface and the ability of innate intelligence, as chiropractors call it, vital forces, we call it, to far supersede our limited brain knowledge, as smart as we think we are, in terms of going, well, you can't do this because if you use this remedy, it counteracts this remedy. I'm like, how many antagonistic relationships occur within the body at every given millisecond? From temperature regulation to blood pressure regulation to blood sugar regulation, you have opposing forces occurring simultaneously all of the time. But we have this mental construct. It's like, well, this remedy does this. And there's so much dogma and that blocks, I believe, the inspiration that we're, or the communication from the divine to give us insight into how to work with these brilliant remedies in that metabolic and energetic way. So these are some of the things I'm just kind of flowing through me right now as we talk, Erin, or I talk and you just do whatever you do.
No, I actually really greatly appreciate that. I work with a lot of complex pediatric cases. And so children with autism, PANS, PANDAS, yeah. Neuroimmune disorders, OCD, anxiety, lots of things that we are seeing emerge in an increasingly toxic world. And it's unfortunate, but, I don't see a classical homeopathic approach being nearly as effective for these cases because, we're looking at layer upon layer upon layer of toxicity, unfortunately. Yeah. And so getting them to a point where true healing can actually occur is a process. And so, while I think, during Hahnemann's time, giving the one remedy, as a constitutional perhaps was very effective at that point because people did not have, all of these toxic layers that we see today. And so I do think homeopathy, as well as any kind of healing practice, does need to evolve as our environment shifts and changes and evolves. And so, because not only does the external environment evolve, but the internal environment changes as well. So I think that's hugely important. You talked recently at the Autism Health Summit about this idea of supplementation with sovereign silver and copper. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and what brought you to that recommendation?
Yeah, this was part of the recognizing something I call the deficiency syndrome. And, you know, I learned it, you know, in my early years in homeopathy as well. We recognized clinically that, as you point out, we've got toxicities and deficiencies that were rare, that didn't exist maybe back in the time of early Hahnemann years. He only began to see things like that again among the aristocracy of Paris because they were living more a lifestyle akin to what we as average folks live. You know, it used to be the high society that could have refined sugar, drink lots of alcohol, or, you know, whatever, or exceed their needs for animal protein to the point of abuse, right? And what that would manifest. And that didn't happen typically in the simple folk, so to speak. So it complicated life. And then we've complicated it further with massive level toxicity and massive deficiencies because we've altered the soil. So the food that is grown in soil that is devoid of minerals is not going to have minerals in it. So you can eat food that looks like the same food, but it's not going to supply what you need. So as I began to see the reality of these deficiencies, I began to look at what, of course, manifests in the absence of these minerals. The infectious disease issue, which is one that is very frightening, although in homeopathy, we have a great history of navigating through infectious disease pandemics with great success. There is just a general weakening of the immune system that is provided for the opportunistic rise of infectious agents within. We don't even have to catch them, right? So partly the fear that has driven most of us in the West to allopaths, you know, in the 20th century, the 21st, like, oh, well, homeopathy, it has some interesting history, but, oh, it's not strong enough. I need to bring out the big guns. So antibiotics became a mainstay of allopathic. And even homeopaths, let's be honest, in the 20th century began abandoning homeopathy due to a lot of pressures. But even that, it was like, oh, my gosh, instant relief, aspirin, instant relief, right? But it was not curative. It was suppressive. So the abandonment of principle due to the ease with which they can now introduce these chemicals into the body and suppress things. And you're like, oh, I'm going on. I'm great. Maybe was, like I said, an immature understanding is we didn't see or they didn't want to see the, what would I call it, direct effects, side effects. But in other words, the diminishment of the vital force by the corruption through suppression, and that we would lead to weaker and sicker individuals through this process. And you know, it's not like Hahnemann and other homeopaths didn't know that. But again, there was such an enamored response in the 20th century to all kinds of scientific and technological advances in organic chemistry. And we were in awe, actually, that, you know, we weren't here that we know of at that time. So, you know, moving forward on this journey, I'm like, my gosh, it's not just about me finding the right remedies or working with the drainage principles and detoxifying or draining the toxins, which was critical. It's like, I've got to look at the substances that the body also needs that are not there. Mm-hmm. And so that was also part of the process of fulfilling the needs of the body, not just energetically, but also from a physical molecular reality, right? And that's not allopathic per se. It's just an acknowledgement of the metabolic needs for things, the minerals particularly. And so began to work with things. And to overcome the fear of infection, when I saw the long history of use of silver as a medicine, going back thousands of years, even though they didn't know the metabolic pathways, I began to dig into the medical literature, as well as one of the seminal books I read to introduce me to the comfort of working with something like a metal, like silver, was by Dr. Robert Becker, his book called The Body Electric. And I began to see not only was silver an antimicrobial that could reduce a burden without necessarily suppression, but it facilitated regeneration of tissue. There was evidence of regrowth of tissue in the presence of the active state of silver, which came to be known as the ion. We got to talk about removing an electron, and you see how mm-hmm. it worked with the pathways of recovery. And it was counterintuitive initially because you talk about these kids on the autism spectrum. Many of the parents that were bringing their kids to me as a homeopath, I was, you know, pulling heavy metals out of their system, mercury, cadmium, arsenic, lead, aluminum, things like that. And so here I was confronted with another metal and going, wait a second, I want to put this into these kids, but I'm pulling all these metals out. So I found that we couldn't, with a broad brush stroke, say all metals are bad and recognize that there are beneficial metals that are needed by the body, including minerals like copper. We get into that in a moment as well, but selenium, chromium, you know, there are a number of things that are metal that are critical for health and vital functions. So as I began to work with silver, I found it to be as safe as a homeopathic remedy in the bioactive silver hydrosol context of a technological breakthrough. It's an electrolytic process, but it utilizes vortices in the production. So I recognized as a homeopath, like, this was a brilliant leap forward by Stephen Quinto, the man who developed the technology that resulted in Sovereign Silver, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I saw the similarity between the homeopathic energy of an Argentum Metallicum homeopathic, but not made in an official pharmacopoeia way, but had a, gosh, the vibrational identification. Yeah, it was like, wow, safety, efficacy, all of that. And it allowed for the elimination of the fear associated with infection for parents, especially with kids, right? Mm-hmm. So I was able to raise my children. Of course, they haven't been vaccinated. They've never even resorted to one antibiotic, partly because of my knowledge of homeopathy too for infection, but also because of the silver hydrosol I was able to utilize when needed safely to eradicate even maybe particularly dangerous infectious manifestations. Mm-hmm. And we were able to overcome all of that. So I never had to resort to allopathic medicine for those things. And so people think, well, is that a transition? Is silver like an allopathic antibiotic? It's not. Yes, it's a broad spectrum antimicrobial, partly is what it does, but it also facilitates a reduction of inflammation, inflammatory cascades and pathways, not by suppression, but by accelerating the body out of the need for that inflammation response into a regenerative pattern. In other words, accelerating regeneration of tissue, kind of like what Dr. Becker brought about to my attention. And then as we came into the COVID era the last few years, of course, I was utilizing cuprum metallicum, homeopathic copper in varicose vein patients, right, left and center. I mean, that was an obvious choice among other things. But as a mineral, didn't realize how much copper had been just eliminated from the soils more than any other mineral since the advent of chemical factory farming agriculture post-World War II. Copper had been depleted by as much as 70 to 80% out of the soils. And many people had abandoned eating like their ancestors. Like, how many people do you meet, Aaron, that eat liver regularly?
Right.
You'd be like, to find that person, it's like, wow, they know something, right? But it's very rare. So not only are we not eating copper-rich foods, but over the last few years, the prescription, even by doctors, of high levels of zinc and vitamin C, in the absence of what zinc comes with in nature and C comes with in nature, both come with copper. Now you're isolating them out. And both of those, even though they're necessary elements, but to some degree, or vitamins, in the absence of copper, they deplete copper even further mm-hmm. from the body. And what happens when you lack copper in the body? You have systemic, unremittent inflammation. You have chronic fatigue. You have connective tissue disorders. You have neurological disorders, heart arrhythmias. You have the inability to protect the integrity of the cardiac proteins that both copper and selenium work together to protect the vasculature, its integrity. Mm-hmm. You have the inability to repair connective tissue because copper is like the mortar that holds a brick wall together in the body. So collagen, elastin, and all of these things rely on copper. In the absence of that, we have connective tissue disorders. You know, I can go on and on, you know, skin conditions, wrinkling, premature wrinkling, graying of the, you know, I probably could use a little bit more copper in my old age here. But if you want to maintain your original hair color, if you want to not wrinkle, all of these things are copper related, connective tissue issues. So I began to see the desperate need for copper. And it was at that time, thank God, in the early phases of COVID, that natural immunogenics made the breakthrough and validated after many years of R&D. Of the copper hydrosol, again, mm-hmm. providing almost a homeopathic level in terms of inflow. So we wouldn't risk toxicity, even in kids who are on the autism spectrum that have methylation issues, et cetera. We could safely introduce silver and copper in this form without burdening their system, creating bioaccumulation issues. And so therefore, we were able to integrate the copper hydrosol into people to navigate the systemic unremittent inflammation, the chronic fatigue, the long COVID, the various connective tissue disorders, the arrhythmias, cardiac issues, on it goes. So that's, you know, for me, a motivation to find a way to cross between the two worlds, the energetic, metabolic, homeopathic, to the not allopathic, but the physical measurable quantities of minerals, for instance, that we need. And it seemed to bridge the two worlds beautifully, where you have the benefits of both in one thing. So it's a, you know, these are my interpretations as you asked me about why I've embraced and endorsed these minerals or metals, even in children who have an inability to methylate or excrete these metals, so I could safely use them almost in a homeopathic way, but also with homeopathy. So I'll pause there because I'm just being much too verbose. There must be a homeopathic remedy here for this.
Yeah, so ultimately, I know there are some other products that you've been recommending for specifically for that deficiency, that broad spectrum deficiency, if you will, among the population. So maybe you could speak a little bit to some of those things as well.
Well, yeah, let's look at, in Unlock the Power to Heal, the book I wrote with Ty Bollinger some years ago, we talked about the various minerals, vitamins, et cetera, and the deficiencies associated with it and how they manifest. So it isn't just a matter of, let's say, hitting the right energy frequency, although there are many, as minerals in homeopathic form, and that can, trigger some powerful responses by the body in recovery. Even when we go to the cell salts issues, what that brings to the body is quite essential in terms of the energetic. Yet again, I look at the crossover between those two worlds. But one of the things I encountered with all of the vascular damage we see at various ages, including the cardiomyopathy, the pericarditis, myocarditis, post-COVID or post-COVID injection. How do we protect the heart? How do we restore integrity? Arrhythmia. They're bloodborne disorders. My gosh, you think about oxygenation, coagulation issues. Once again, mineral deficiencies like copper play a huge role there. But the vasculature itself also relies upon silica or silicon. We have silicea, but homeopathically, but also in a mineral form to provide the building blocks, if you will, not like amino acids, but something similar in terms of connective tissue integrity, strength, and regeneration. So silica plays a role there as well. So these are the focal points of my mineral replenishment, where we could say across the board, without a blood analysis, most of us are deficient. And if we're bringing in the right form, we're not going to risk toxicity either. Another aspect is I mentioned a metal chromium. Of course, if chromium is in the hexavalent state, it's going to be toxic and dangerous and carcinogenic even. But in the whole food form, that mineral is critical for energy utilization. We talk about the insulin would carry sugar into the cells or into the fat or relinquish it. But what's the missing link there is the chromium molecule, because chromium's like the dock worker at the end, where you got this tractor trailer of the sugar with the insulin, and you get to the dock and there's nobody to offload it. And people say that's insulin resistance. It's like, well, if you have a truckload of goods that you delivering and you get to the dock and there's no dock workers, you don't say that's, semi-tractor trailer truck resistance. You're like, there's no dock workers. So we look at chromium and go, hey, there's no chromium. So introducing that as either a remedy or a supplemental form, you now have the ability to utilize energy more efficiently. And both chromium and selenium facilitate various liver functions, right? The liver is the key for thousands of years. They knew it in Chinese medicine, Ayurveda. And of course, in clinical homeopathy with the drainage approach, they recognize that too in a homeopathic way. We've got to drain the toxins. We've got to help the liver. So looking at those minerals to support that is another thing, herbs as well. But I go selenium, chromium, these are big, big issues here. And then, coming to the vasculature, we realized in the 1990s, they identified like a brand new molecule. Like, well, where'd that come from? Nitric oxide. What? And this miracle molecule, the discoverers got the Nobel Prize for this. And yet you can facilitate the production of nitric oxide, which, by the way, relaxes the smooth walls of the arterial system, the venous system, to allow for increased blood flow, reduction of blood pressure, et cetera. But if you look at the things that can facilitate accelerated production of nitric oxide at any age, and you look at it in an isolated vacuum, you could say, hey, let's drink a lot of beet juice. Beets are great for the liver too. Or we could look at L-citrulline or arginine on our own and go, let's pump that into the body. And you're like, well, look, we got a quick rapid boost of nitric oxide. Isn't that great? And then if you investigate it from a more of a 360 degree viewpoint, you see, well, what happens when you boost nitric oxide? There's also a corresponding rise of something very dangerous called peroxynitrite, a wicked free radical that can create inflammation and damage. So you're like, you get this good stuff and also this bad stuff comes up. So in isolation, if you do those things to boost nitric oxide, it's a bit, I believe, irresponsible. Whereas, I mentioned the cardio miracle formula when I lecture now, and I utilize this every day because it's a comprehensive food product with many minerals present in it. It can facilitate a prolonged, accelerated, or increased production of nitric oxide. But simultaneous to that, because of the minerals, antioxidants that are present in a food form, it will counteract the rise of peroxynitrite so that you have that drop in the dangerous free radical because you're counteracting it simultaneous to the So now you have a responsible way to acknowledge the various communication and other pathways, because not one thing, it's always a bunch of things working together. And you've got this beautiful symphony working together, so you can facilitate that rise. And that nitric oxide then provides for the increased blood flow, the reduced blood pressure, the antioxidant impact as well, and so many other functions, brain, nervous system, you name it, that are enhanced by, including dealing with things like PTSD. So these things I look at and go, wow, you know, I can't just be a homeopath and nothing else. You know, that we got to look at, and we become, you know, I say homeopaths are the ultimate generalists, right? Where you have all the specialization in medicine, where you go to a podiatrist, like the toe's not connected to anything else, or a dentist, right? That doesn't understand biological dentistry, where the mouth is just the mouth, right? We know sure. It's connection to everything. Homeopaths recognize, or should recognize, the connection of everything. And so that was what led me to go, all right, I can't just give a remedy or a series of remedies without acknowledging these people are suffering from deficiencies. We talk about toxicities, and you'll be like, well, that's just too much. It becomes overwhelming and complex. But as complex as the natural world is and creation is, when you know that complexity, it becomes simple to correct the pathways, because you know, hey, this is missing, this is missing. And it isn't about just replacing something like a body part. It's about nourishing the body parts and, of course, energizing them and all of that, recognizing the communication between the physical reality and the etheric or energetic realities. And we don't need to isolate one from the other. We can see how they interact. And then that way, we can achieve healing that has been thought to be impossible, even sometimes by homeopaths. Because remember, my mentor was given up for dead by homeopaths who said there's no cure for tuberculosis mm-hmm. with homeopathy. And then the guy goes, you know, I'm going to die if I don't figure this out, finds Vanier's work and heals himself. And then, you know, it sets the stage for more discovery, more possibilities rather than impossibilities.
Yeah. You know, I do think it's so important to recognize, again, the limitations in our current state of affairs with regard to environment, in both internal and external. And so, you know, I do recommend to my patients, you know, things like supplements in order to help facilitate a more rapid healing, because yes, we could do some of those things homeopathically, but I do think sometimes a more material dose can be helpful, specifically for people that are in distress, that are in, you know, chronic states. So moving forward now, what do you think is the best overall approach with regard to when we're talking about these complex conditions? Obviously, we have supplementation, we have, you know, homeopathic medicines that are very valuable. Where do you see homeopathy being more effective versus a material dose, say like CardioMiracle or, you know, I know that the silver hydrazole and the copper is obviously much closer to a homeopathic dose. But where do you see that divide, if you will, when we need to perhaps go into what we as homeopaths would call a material dose versus, you know, versus a homeopathic dose?
Yeah. Oh, it's a great question. I hope we're not like boring anybody out there. This is always my concern when we get into the details like this and people kind of glaze over and go, I don't know if I want that. Just tell me the right remedy. But your questions are excellent. And I love, and again, when we met, I was like so excited. I can talk to another homeopath who has another show. This is going to be awesome. We can share information and we're all better for it. So here, let's use the example of cardiovascular issues. Protagus, hawthorn berry, right? One of the most powerful homeopathic remedies that we can have for heart issues. The irony, of course, is homeopathy is regulated as a drug by the FDA, even though we don't have to go through the, you know, preclinical, all that stuff, although they'd love to change that, as you know, the attacks on homeopathy to wipe out the competition. That's been ongoing for a long time. But we know what it can do. And funny enough, you know, if you use Crataegus in a homeopathic remedy, they'll often say, well, that's a legend item. In other words, a prescription, right? Homeopathic. You can't just because that's heart stuff and you're not allowed. That's not self-limiting and self-diagnosable. Get into the regulation side of it. But at the same time, it's such a valuable remedy for a lot of the cardiovascular events that are we're witnessing.
Right.
At the same time, you look and you ask about the CardioMiracle. Well, we know that we have physiological needs in terms of nutrient absorption, utilization for these pathways, because these things, the heart is also a physical thing, even though it has energetic components and esoteric sides. You know, when we talk about energy fields of the body,
Right.
And so if we, let's say, trigger a healing through the use of Crataegus for the heart, I wouldn't dispute that, discount it at all. But if we identify that the reason also that the heart is malfunctioning is because of a lack of the things like we've talked about, the minerals like copper or other, or the blood flow is not good because we lack the nitric oxide. And, it's not, how would you say, it's not, try not to isolate things. I'm always trying to integrate things is my point, I guess, that I wouldn't like to think it's an either or principle. I still am going to nourish, like, for instance, the use of hawthorn berry as a plant, as a food, as a medicine in that way. I don't think taking or ingesting the hawthorn berry or the syrup I get like from Dr. Christopher's, which is like harvesting your own, is necessary allopathic. You're nourishing the body with its needs too. But I think one can enhance the other. This is another thing I've seen utilizing the homeopathic energy, call it that, of the thing that is also a physical reality and a need, seems to facilitate, in my clinical experience, the use of those things that we also are having a trouble, utilizing fully, for instance, whether it be blockages or other things that are going on energetically or otherwise. So I tend to want to integrate that, but how do you tell the difference? I mean, some of it's intuitive, some of it's a clinical experience, and it doesn't deny the reality of homeopathy's brilliance and beauty and safety in triggering an opening of a pathway or a communication that had been blocked, something with the energetic realities of the existence of something like the heart, for instance. So I don't know how to answer that fully because it's such a good question. And it's something we could probably talk about, bring 100 homeopaths together, and we may have all different perspectives on that. I'd be curious as to, turn the tables on you just because you haven't gotten to speak much. I know it's your show. I'm not usually interviewed. I'm usually doing the interview. So I would throw it back. And when you come on my show, we'll talk about this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I firmly believe that there is an energetic opening that happens with homeopathic medicine. So I would be, I guess in clinical practice, for myself, I would definitely utilize the homeopathic remedies alongside perhaps a supplement or whatever it is that we're addressing, our deficiencies, those kinds of things. But absolutely, I believe, we've been given as homeopaths, I always say we've got hundreds of thousands of remedies in our toolkit. And that is something that I don't think the vast majority of any other practitioner really has. And so, our toolkit is so expansive. And so, we can look at all of these things from a more mechanistic perspective. For example, okay, well, we're deficient in copper or silver, so we can give cuprum or silver in
Argentum.
homeopath argentum. And
Yeah.
but ultimately we really there's something about the energetic opening of those pathways that homeopathy really facilitates in a very
Yes.
beautiful way that I do think is necessary to do really alongside, because so many of these pathways are, I don't know if you heard Bob Miller speak at Autism Health Summit, but I've been working with him for a while. He's been on the podcast. We've got a couple of episodes with him. But speaking about these genetic pathways that are in so many, specifically in the population that I work with, are blocked, and they've got, multiple, what we call SNPs or genetic mutations. Really the evolution of the genome, human genome is what that really is all about. But and now, getting to that place where we see an opening of the case, I do think can be facilitated with homeopathy, but also supported by, various
Yes.
supplements that can then help, further the
Right.
progress in the case. So,
Yeah, Aaron,
yeah.
that's exactly, the thing I identified as well as I went out to the world as a homeopath and then learned more and more about some of those physical needs as well. But I still acknowledge what you say is that homeopathy and the energy that it brings in, the information, the education, the communication that it brings back to the body is, or these are the critical missing components in recovery. As much as I acknowledge, as I point out, the deficiency syndrome and disease, the inability to metabolically even get at those things that are physical, which is why I like, that crossover between the two worlds, like with the hydrosol technology. It's like that. It's like acknowledging that we don't have the energetic information anymore. It's like it's lost. Like you talk about that, I would call it a de-evolution, if you will, a devolving away from our genetic integrity because we've relied generationally on food that isn't food anymore, and we're exposed to things that it's corrupting these things. And homeopathy can tap back into that original intelligence at a deep energetic level, metabolic, etheric, if you will, level. So to me, it's the missing component. You can approach it from a pure physical way. You can see some great benefits, but there's a certain point you may be hitting, you know, something you're like, I can't break through. And I would argue, as it sounds like you would too, that that's the role, the realm of the energetics, the homeopathics, to open that back up, the communication, so that we utilize the things we're designed and we know, or we did know how to use, and we've somehow forgot. And I don't mean that consciously, but, you know, within the transition generationally into away from what sustains us, revitalizes us, or vitalizes us. So I'm with you there. It's the missing component. I don't want to be without it, but it, you know, we don't discard all the stuff that also we need.
Absolutely. So I think that segues us perfectly into our rapid fire 8 questions. We ask these questions of all of our guests. It's a fun way to get to know them a little bit deeper than perhaps some of the other programs that they've been on, and have a little bit of fun too, because we like to have fun. So
you did not warn me about this.
Uh-oh. All right. Robert, your first question: if you could choose only one natural remedy for the rest of your life, what would that be?
Wow, you really had to throw that at me first. I mean, you know what do we call a natural remedy? Again, that's a big question that I throw back at you. But there's so many number ones out there that to delineate, you know, which one would it be? I mean, it would have to be, since the air, I would assume it's still there. It would be the hydrogen in the water that's has molecular hydrogen dissolved into it, because that facilitates so many extraordinary pathways of recovery, sure, and healing and communication. So we can't do without that clean water that has molecular hydrogen dissolved into it. I say, you know, that from there you could leap almost anywhere.
Absolutely. Tell us something most people don't know about you.
Gosh, I'm an open book. I think they know everything about me by now, having been on the air for, you know, my 25 years. What don't they know about me? Good Lord, I guess if it's a new audience, what would it be? What don't they know? Again, I know it's for people that don't know me now, are like, oh, it's anything. I could say anything.
Sure.
I'm just thinking about those that have been on the journey with me for decades now. Let's see. Gosh, you the second question was harder than the first one.
I promise they'll get easier. I hope,
so?
Anyway.
I'm like getting very nervous and intimidated now. All right, what they don't know about me. Man. No one's ever asked me that. I guess that's the thing. Aaron, you're just nailing this thing down really hard. Because, you know, it's like the things I like to do are all out there. Like, what,
sure.
Was it? I don't know about me.
Maybe a hobby or something like that. Sometimes that's.
No, I mean, because I love to mountain bike. You know, I love to kickbox. I mean, I'm like, yeah, all these things. I mean, I talk about, on my show, I talk about all the stuff I like to do. You know, so it's like, and the things I don't like, I say, I don't like that too. So I'm like hard pressed to figure out, you know, a question like that. It's like, I'm not trying to hide stuff. So I'm like, don't they know about me? Can we pass on that and come back to it?
How about this? What is something you absolutely detest? Is there anything out there you say, I don't know, for me, it's pickles. I hate pickles.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess for me, it's arrogance. You know, those that, you know, want to dominate and control others through maybe their book knowledge or their degree, I call it medical particularly. And again, that's not a hidden thing, though. It's like I openly talk about that. So interesting. You asked a question I'm having a hard time answering, because like I said, I feel like I talk about all this stuff and you guys know me, but again, your audience doesn't. So tune into the Robert Scott Bell Show.
There we go. All right. If I were to compile a playlist of happy music, what song would you suggest be added?
Happy music. Okay. Cause well, for me, I grew up on Neil Diamond, for instance. And it's like, people look at me like, you're not very cool. I'm like, well, yeah, I know. But I like 70s, 80s rock big time. That's my mainstay. Yeah. But of course, if they're happy music is going to be, for me, oh gosh, good Lord, reggae. It's just the genre. If I hear reggae, I just feel Jamaican. And, you know, you get a little happy and just, you feel that kind of rhythm and little, an islandy kind of thing. So for me, that would be the way I'd answer that at the moment.
Yeah, a little Bob Marley there. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I'm leaving the radio host speechless. It's pretty funny.
Dude, yeah, look, I knew this was going to be awesome. I just didn't know in which direction other than the stuff we would collegially interact with. And then you have to get all 8 questions you're not ready for.
All right. Next is, what's your favorite guilty pleasure?
Well, I think, you know, watching sports, because I grew up in sports, and, you know, some people are like, well, that's a waste of time. It's all there, but it's really a nice relief from all the intensity and seriousness that we're all addressing from a health and healing perspective. So, as my wife described it during COVID, which she was not a sports fan. And one of the things, like when she wrote out her ideal mate, it was like, I don't want to be a sports widow, right? You know, and I've liked sports from, you know, my young years growing up and, you know, with my dad and things like that. But even she became a sports fan during COVID because she said, I've got to find a place where the rules actually apply, because it seems like everything has gone wild and nobody is paying for any of their crimes anymore. Right. So for her, now we sit down and we can watch sports together. It's like, okay, that could be considered a guilty pleasure, but I don't feel so guilty about it because it's part of life.
Well, at least you brought your spouse along with you now. So
she joined me. I couldn't believe it. I was like, who is this woman? I love you. I already love you. But so
awesome. What is the most influential book you've ever read?
Wow. Most influential book I've ever read. Now, let's see. Going back to, there's a number of those too that I could go into. Gosh, it depends on what year we're talking about in my life. So there's like, you know, you're pushing me down to that one thing again. And I'm like, I'm hard pressed. It's like, what's your favorite song? Really, really depends on the need and the use for that song. Yeah. So I mentioned The Body Electric, which was really seminal in terms of my development beyond just my homeopathic knowledge into that transitional state between the two worlds. So that was really impactful. Of course, Divided Legacy, series of books that are not easy to read. They're like, you can work out with them, go into the history of medicine in America that I didn't know. You know, reading back in the days of my philosophy discoveries, Carl Jung and his writings were impactful to me. Jungian stuff, of course. We can go into Steiner, the books that Steiner wrote, Rudolf Steiner, have been impactful. And then, you know, I was a voracious reader, especially in my younger years, developing into my interest in healing to the point where now I forget how many books I've read sometimes. And I look back and I'm like, dude, I read, oh yeah, I remember reading that too, and that too, and that too, and that too. So a voracious appetite for learning is something I had. And I would encourage, if you're young out there and you don't like reading, because I know a lot of young people don't, you can discover whole new worlds if you would just open a book, a real book, and sit with it again. And I don't do it as much as I did because I kind of went so intense in it. It was like, you know, people you study years to be officially a PhD. And I just like, I couldn't go their route and their rules. I wanted to study what I wanted to study. So you investigate, you learn, you assimilate, you put into practice. And then suddenly you realize one day I actually learned some stuff and I've applied it and I know some stuff now. And I wondered where I got that from. And you know, you look at people like that, like my mentor back in the day, I was like amazed by the knowledge that the guy had. I'm like, how did that happen? Well, he had been alive for a lot longer than me and been assimilating information in that way. And it just became him. And right. You know, that's the kind of thing that, so I would encourage people, yes, pick up a book and read while you still have access to them.
Absolutely. All right. What does the word revolution mean to you?
Well, I like the a root word origin, you know, going back to the original meaning. And we talk about revolve, revolution. I see that going around in a circle or a cycle. And I think it's getting back to origin point, you know, coming back fully around. Now, if we look at the revolution in terms of a political movement, you know, the movement away from the crown of England for the United States to be formed, we look at a revolution, we go, oh, it's bloody, it's violent. But it's been argued by many people I've talked to, they're smarter than me, that the revolution occurred long before the war, that it was a thought, an idea coming to a conclusion that brought us closer to what I believe is our true origin, and that we are born in freedom, even if we are captured and enslaved by political entities or others that would program our minds into some, you know, believing that we are subject to jurisdictions for which they're ungodly, for instance. So I'd say a revolution is a changed consciousness, much like a miracle, and a consciousness that one day reconnects to the source of all healing, wisdom, everything like that. Coming back to that, recognizing that freedom, second to life itself, is that greatest gift that we should preserve or be willing to defend, and if necessary, fight to regain.
Absolutely. And what does the word remedy mean to you?
Well, remedy, I come back and I think of the word remedial. And you think of remedial, it's like, well, that's really basic. That's for stupid people. No, it's like, if you don't know the remedial basics, you can't get up to those high levels of abilities to help people. So it's going back to basics, the remedy, finding out true cause and connecting to that. And, you know, revolutionarily changing the consciousness, changing the movement from that point forward or what that point outward. So that's what remedy means to me.
Absolutely. And if you could impart one piece of wisdom onto our listeners, what would that be?
That, as we've heard from some of the greatest teachers, spiritual and otherwise, throughout our history, is that love is more powerful than power itself and the lust for power. That is, as difficult as it is sometimes to believe that love can overwhelm and melt the anger and the frustration and all of those things that seem to be negative in our world, that it really is the thing that will sustain us and help us overcome all of the obstacles and challenges our mind believes are too big, too powerful. We can't overcome them unless we're more powerful. That's the trap. That's the trick, to think we have to become more powerful. You already are, because the love of God that created you is more powerful than any lust for power that exists in any or all human beings that may have that from time to time. So that vitamin L, I call it, that divine love that is without condition, is something that if we got back to and we lived it truly, we could overcome anything.
Amazing. So, Robert, where's the best place for people to come find you, listen to your podcast, and connect further?
Well, if you look over my left shoulder, if I don't know if this is seen on the screen or not, it's robertscottbell.com. That's my personal website for the show and everything we do. And you can sign up for a free newsletter that comes through email any way you want. Come on over to robertscottbell.com. And there's upcoming events tabs. You can learn about all the events, like we just did the AHS event together and others that are coming up. I'd love to meet y'all. And again, what a beautiful thing that we connected at that event. And I was so excited. I don't know if you noticed. I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. And here we are. Had I known you were going to do these tough 8 questions, I might have run away. I don't know, but I don't think so. You know, coming back around, anything we want to wrap up. I look forward to getting you on my show eventually too, and having more discussion and connecting the community of homeopaths that have open hearts and open minds. As I said, the dogma is what defeats us. And recognizing that we all have a unique link to the divine, if we are open to it, that we can take what Hahnemann brought to us and take it to unlimited places from here. And not just one way, but in the unique ways each of us have, because we're all created as individuals of the same creator. But we have unique perspectives, eyes and ears and experiences that we bring to reality and bring to life. And I just hope and pray and wish that we would all appreciate that more, rather than look at it as something as a threat to what our knowledge base is. So anyway, grateful for the opportunity to get together with you on this.
Absolutely. It's been such a pleasure. Thank y'all. Take care. We'll see you next time.
Remedy Revolution is here for you.